Me. This is the news according to me. Had to wet the whistle a little bit with my hot chocolate. We have a little bit of that. Because there's a big shoe today. This is the big shoe today. Great big shoe. And the day before, or is today the big event? Don't know. Next couple days are going to be real interesting. We've got a lot of things happening at the Capitol. Of course, all eyes are fixed on that, which makes you wonder what else is going on while they're doing that. So, a couple things in the news. This is going to be kind of a quick show. I spoke last night about with Rabbi Rick about potentially talking about a couple people's speeches. One of the things was what Lindell had been saying, the post that he made. And I had some theories on that. I decided to go down the rabbit hole of putting on my little tinfoil hat to see what, you know, what potentially could be the, the conspiracy theory. I can go deeper into the conspiracy theory idea on the whole Lindell meeting with the president. And, you know, it's funny, when I first saw that picture of, I think I may have mentioned this on the show last night, but I when I first saw that picture of Lindell coming out of the White House, and he had, it's like the area where the Oval Office security area is. He was coming out with a cup of coffee in one hand, and he had some notes in the other hand, and the notes were kind of flopped open, and somebody happened to catch a picture of that and zoom in on it. When I first saw it, I thought it was fake. My first thought was, yeah, that wasn't on there. And this picture was probably from, you know, earlier in the year, and he just happened to have some notes in his, you know, because I know he was at the White House for that one presentation where they did a thing. So I figured it was probably just that picture, and somebody figured out a way to Photoshop some letters on a page. You know how they do that kind of stuff all the time. And so I thought that was what it was. Well, come to find out, this was real. He really did have those notes. They really did get a zoomed in picture of them, and the notes really did say what they did. What they said. Well, I was like, what in the world? Now, a couple things could happen here. We talked about it a little bit on last night's show, but I thought about it a little bit more. I mean, Lindell spoke about what his experience was at the White House, and I have no reason to not believe that everything he said was true. That his experience there was what it was about. Now, I think I have that actually, his little talk, I think I have it actually recorded because a lot of times now I screen record stuff because I always get my iPhone and my iPads with the most amount of memory I can on them anymore because I do like to do a lot. I like to take a lot of video, but I also am finding it really useful to be able to actually screen record some of this stuff and save it because and I've got, you know, I can download it on YouTube, but YouTube still has control of that app and they still have control of that file. They could potentially get rid of it. The only way I could potentially keep it on my phone is if I were to potentially have it, you know, take it off of data plan, you know, put it in airplane mode and maybe be able to watch that video again with it in airplane mode because once you go back in on the data plan, who knows what they can do with it at that point. They probably have control of it at that point. I'm just assuming they can erase it from your downloaded files. Maybe they can't. I don't know. But I'm not going to take a chance. So I've been screen recording a lot of stuff. And that way, at least I get the audio and the video. Video is usually a little bit weird depending on what device I record it on. But I'm doing that a lot more. And you can also screen record things with, you know, I've got Apple products. So I can screen record things, the windows of things on my Mac as well, so I can do that, and I can also screen record things on my iPad, of course. So I've been doing that a lot lately when I find a video that's potentially going to be taken down, and a lot of videos, about half of the ones that I get sent by people are typically taken down within a day or less. So I would encourage you to do that too if you can. And if you don't have a lot of memory on your phone, just, you know, back it up or just, you know, send it to something, send it to another file, get, you know, down, offload it somehow, back it up somewhere to a thumb drive somehow or to a computer as quickly as you can, get your memory back. So that, that, you know, not your memory, but the phone memory, your memory, you can't get back. So the whole thought here, the idea is, and where I'm going with this is that I've backed up a lot of these, I have a lot of these files now. And I was going over the Jerome Corsi speech that was given, and I was able to piece together a timeline of when he actually did that speech. And it was probably 2 years ago that he actually had that speech. He spoke of the military having an agreement with Trump, President Trump. At that time, he wasn't even candidate Trump, but someone in the military came to him and told him about the potential of using the military as a quasi-coup of some sort that would be able to sweep in, and then while that was going on, they would be able to basically bring everybody to justice through a military tribunal because of our justice system breaking down. You know, and I was thinking about, along that line, let me just go down that path as well. I'm going down about five different paths, so hopefully you can keep up with me here. And I was thinking about all the different institutions that we have established in our nation, some of them constitutionally, some of them not so much. A lot of the bureaucracy in Washington, we're talking probably not thousands of people under employment, but probably tens of thousands of people under government employee through our federal government that are not there based on any kind of constitutional authority. Many of the organizations we have don't have they can't prosecute anybody. Let's just put it that way. Prosecutorial. Yeah, I speak for a living. Prosecutorial authority. In other words, like the IRS. The IRS actually has no enforcement authority, according to their bylaws and the constitutional authority that they have. They can't do anything. Much like Lindsey Graham, all they can do is have a hearing or a trial, and they can't enforce anything. They have to use color of law. In other words, they have to use law enforcement to enforce anything. When they do a raid or when they do a confiscation, they do. Sometimes they have officers that go in and take things. But they technically don't have that authority to actually execute or exercise a warrant like that. And a lot of times, and then there's some counties, some states, you'll find that some counties and some sheriffs will back the property owner. If an IRS agent comes in and tries to take something from them, I'm not going to talk about how I know all this because I've had some experience with the IRS. Let's just say that. So many, many years ago, it was a whole nother lifetime ago, but it seems like it was yesterday. So all those things happen, and but it wasn't yesterday, by the way. It was at least a week ago. No, it was some time ago. Had a mess with the IRS. Had some bad advice from some people. Actually, it was good advice. It's just that you can't play it out. You can't do it. Danzel Washington figured it out too. He had the same, almost the same exact thing happen to him, and he involved with the same people, and even so. So yeah, I need more hot chocolate. So so going down this road, you've got all these different organizations, the IRS, the DEA, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. I think is that what it is? BATF now? That's what it's called. It used to just be the ATF. Now it's the BATF. And they're, you know, of course, they're into everything. So you got all these organizations that are part of the government that technically aren't part of the Constitution. This has been established through congressional authority, basically, and some of it falls under the executive branch. So you have all this stuff going on. Well, some of them, so we've got a court system. You know, we've got the legislative, we've got the executive, we've got the judicial, and all these different, you know, I started thinking about all these different institutions that our country has and how they have utterly failed us as a nation, as people, as individuals. And here's what I'm getting at. We have a Congress that is supposed to protect our individual rights. That's what we send them to Congress for. Okay, the Constitution establishes that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by rights by their, from their Creator. They have the right to, you know, you go through the Bill of Rights, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We also have the right to property, to be secure in our property. We have the right to free speech. We have the right to, exercise our religion, and the right to peaceably gather. All those things that are in there, in protest. So we have all those things that are in there, and the Fifth Amendment. You have the it goes on and on. There's just a whole bunch of them. And those things were not given to us by Congress. Okay, this is where it gets tricky, and people think, and I've even heard, it angers me to no end. Believe it or not, something actually gets me worked up. Right after the Affordable Care Act was passed, because we had to pass it to see what was in it. Because, you know, we've got that going on.
Good morning.
Oh, yeah, good morning.
Sunday morning.
Well, it's not Sunday morning, but you probably think it is. So... we had to pass that to see what was in it, right? So we get this bill, this Affordable Care Act thing, which was, of course, the total opposite of affordable care. And everybody saw their insurance premiums go up like crazy. So we have this situation where we have that happen, and Congress came right out after this bill was passed. And this is people, of course, on the left. Because they don't understand. I think they spell Constitution with a K. They don't even know how it's spelled. And this guy comes out right away. I think he was like the majority whip at that time or something. I don't know what he was. He was something on the left, and wasn't Pelosi. But this guy comes out, and he goes, "Of all the rights that this body has given to the people, this is one of the most important rights that we've given them." Okay, this says it all. When you hear a politician say that, that tells you everything you need to know about that politician. Congress, that body, coming from that temple of democracy, did not give us any rights. Our rights are endowed. You can say they're natural rights, if you don't believe that there is a God, you can say they're God-given rights. That every human being that has life has the right to life. I happen to believe that that life starts at conception, and that everyone has that right to live. No one has the right to choose to take that life away from you without due process, or your property, or the fruits of your labor, even though they do it all the time. Income taxes are not due process, by the way. So, they're penalizing you for working, doing something that you need to do to survive. You're giving your exchange. Well, I'm not going to get into this. I digress. That's the phrase. I digress. There we go. Let's go back to where I was at. So this guy comes out and says that the Congress gave us this right to health care. Well, we have the right to health care. Everybody has a right to health care. And I know that there's people probably screaming at their little listening device right now. No, they don't. Not everybody. Yeah, you have the right to health care. What you don't have the right to is to make me pay for it. To make someone else pay for it. You don't have that right. You don't have the right to take away from me so that you can pay for your health care. Is that understandable? Well, the government's going to pay for it. Well, who pays the government? How do they make their money? What kind of widgets do they sell? What kind of service do they provide that makes money that they can pay for your health care? The only service they provide is running around taking from people, giving to others. Now, am I totally against any kind of a safety net or any kind? No. And here's the stark reality of this is you can walk into any hospital and receive or they can't refuse you service. They can't refuse you care, whether you can afford it or not. So that's everybody has that right. Even people who are undocumented walk into hospitals, can't be turned away. Now, they can bill you, and you may be in debt for a while, but that's the way it works. So, you know, I have an arrangement with a group of people that we have something called insurance, and I participate in this insurance by paying into premiums. Everybody in this insurance plan pays in with premiums. And then when that insurance company then takes all those millions and billions of dollars, they try to invest it, they try to do what they can with it to help it to be responsible with that money so that when somebody has a problem, they pay it out when there's a claim. Now, whether or not they handle it properly and whether or not there needs to be some regulation of that kind of thing and some making some oversight, making sure that they do their things ethically and properly within the bounds of some kind of regulations, yes, absolutely. There needs to be fair trade there. There needs to be fair agreements and everybody needs to be on the same playing field. Then what ends up happening then is that company then we basically share in each other's liability. So that's how it gets paid out. And the insurance company takes about a 2% profit off of that. The profit margin on insurance for an insurance company is very small. Now, they are dealing with huge amounts of money, billions of dollars, billions and billions. So that's how that kind of is supposed to work. Now, when you get people coming into the country that aren't paying into taxes, they're not part of the system, they don't have, and some of them do pay taxes, they have taxes taken out of their checks, and they don't file income tax because they're not documented citizens. So some of them do. Under certain circumstances, they pay taxes and don't get any kind of get the benefits. However, for the most part, most of them, so many of them work for cash and work for less because they don't have to pay taxes. So they don't have tax taken out. So, and here's the other little dirty little secret, by the way, speaking of rabbit holes and other paths going down. So most people do not even realize that they only pay for 50% of their federal tax in their withholdings. Guess who pays the other 50%? Just magically shows up on a tree. It just magically shows up and it gets paid. No, the employer pays it. So the employer might be paying you $10 an hour. And guess how much they're going to pay? Or say you make $100 in a week. Guess how much the employer pays to have you there? $107.50. That's just for the... That's not including other benefits and other things they got to pay. That's just for that's the federal withholding. So what you see in your check, it looks like, well, but the boss is making so much more money. He's making so much money, and I'm only making this much money, and I get all this taken out of my check. But guess what? They're also paying tax on top of that. Then they pay taxes just to be alive as a business. Some cities have other kinds of fees and things you have to pay. And then you get your corporate taxes and all the other stuff you got to pay and all the stuff you got to pay. It just keeps, there's a lot of overhead involved. And then guess what? You get to pay somebody to manage all that stuff. That's just flat overhead. When you have to pay an administrative assistant just to keep track of it all. That's a huge cost to a company that wouldn't have to be there. Yeah, I've owned a business, a couple of them. And I'm telling you, there's a lot to it, a lot more to it than most people realize, and they definitely stifle businesses by doing what they're doing. Most small businesses, which run this company, that run this country, basically keep us which are the engine of this company, are the engine of this country, are running on a shoestring, especially when they first start out. The very few people start off with millions of dollars that they. They can go for 10, they have a 10-year plan with millions of dollars and they get all, they're basically endowed with this money that they can go for 10 years until they make it. till they make a profit. That doesn't happen. People scrimp and save and try to make it through and do everything they can. I started a business a few years ago, many years ago, actually. I had left a job that I was doing pretty well at. I had a 401k that I had saved up a chunk of money. And of course, I took that out, lost a lot of money because of taxes, because of early withdrawal and that. I took a lot of other things, you know, I was all in. Now, I was at an age where I knew I could still recover from that if that all fell through. I didn't think it was going to fall through. And it really shouldn't have fallen through, except that I had a really bad supplier for a major component in my little business that I was starting. And it could have really gone one of two ways. It could have gotten really big and really done really well. Now, the 2008 economy hit, which really knocked it on its butt. But even that, I was still at a stage where if things would have been going well, probably would have done okay. Probably could have pulled through that. However, the supplier issue, really two different suppliers that kind of, one supplier just flat did me wrong, lied to me. The other one just wasn't providing a component that was worth its, it wasn't holding up. So, I've been through that kind of stuff before, and it's, you know, you can lose it all. And I ended up it wasn't good. It wasn't a good experience. Well, I mean, it was a good experience. I learned a lot. That's why I'm here sharing it with you. I'm passing it on. So if you need some advice on that kind of thing, just let me know. I'll find somebody that can talk to you, because I don't want to. I'm a scorned individual. You don't want to talk to me. I'm just negative. I'm a negative Nelly. No, I have a business now that I really like. It's a very low overhead business. I'm kind of by myself. It's very small. And I'm happy with that. I don't need 7 or 8 employees. I've had a business with 8 employees. I think I'm choking up a little bit. So, I had a business with 8 employees. And some of them were part-time, and some, you know, they weren't all full-time, but, and that was a lot of overhead as well. I found myself just basically managing people and not doing what I really like to do. So the world of business is an interesting thing, and trying to make it work. And of course, then you got government cranking down. And my point in all this is that the government then comes in and thinks that, well, you've got a business, you got all this money, and now you're going to have to pay out in all this taxes, and we're going to basically penalize you for doing that. You went out and took a risk and tried it, and so now, and no, look at all the money you're making now, and so we're going to take it away. We need to take some of that away from you. They weren't there when I needed it for a loan to get started, which I'm glad I didn't get. I'm glad I didn't get an SBA loan. I mean, that would have changed things, but yeah. So all these institutions that we have out there, getting back to the original statement, the original course I was taking there before this really short program gets really long. I looked at all this stuff. Okay, we've got a Supreme Court and a judiciary in the nation. We have some appellate courts. We have district courts. All this stuff that goes, it's federally. It's all I don't know how it all works. I've never looked at all that stuff. I know that there's like district courts. There's local courts. You got your county courts. You got your state courts. You got your state. You know, all this stuff, and then it goes into the federal judiciary. And that system, in my opinion, has become politically corrupted. It's not about the law anymore. Lady Justice with the blindfold on is not, that's a myth now. That's no longer out there. When you have to hire a judge, a justice that has a certain color of skin or a certain gender, or a certain orientation. Tell me, what does that have to do with interpreting the law? Should it matter? It really shouldn't. The law is the law, and it shouldn't matter what color your skin is. The argument is, well, a person of color might look at that differently. Well, I understand there are some things that are kind of a fine line, and it might come down to that, based on their experience. But is that right? Can a person look objectively at the law and see how it rules? Now, if I were to say, if look at Justice John Roberts, I would say no. Because when you want to look at a law to see whether or not it's constitutional, and you say, well, if I just tweak this right here, yeah, we can fix this for you. And then now, there you go. Now it's constitutional. That's not a judge's position to take. Now, if he wants to tell them what to do to fix it and then send it back to them, they can fix it. But he didn't do that. Now, I don't know. To me, that seemed a little bit wrong. And to not take a case that is basically the one thing that their job is to do is to, you know, have hearings on cases between states where there's no other place to take a case, they wouldn't even hear it. And I think that's wrong. And my understanding is it, whether or not it was or not, but my understanding was that it was his bullying with the three junior justices to vote no. If that happened, then our justice system is really messed up. If it didn't, then okay. If they were, you know, based on real rulings and everything else, I see it as a very politicized environment. And I don't trust it anymore. And then we have the FBI. Speaking of justice. And what that has become. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show yesterday, but I know I talked about it with a couple people yesterday, and I don't know if I talked about it when we were actually on the show. There's a thing called the Five Eyes. And while I'm talking about this, I'm going to actually see if I can actually find some reference to this. You might want to look on DuckDuckGo, because if you look this up and try to do any kind of examination. But I think that let's see what I can find here. Five Eyes Wikipedia. The Five Eyes is an intelligence alliance comprising Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom and the United States. These countries are parties to the multilateral UK-USA agreement, a treaty for joint cooperation in signals intelligence. The origins of the Five Eye, which is spelled F-V-E-Y, can be traced back to the post-World War II period when the Atlantic Charter was issued by the Allies to lay... where is it here? This goes to another part. I got to click on this. And now I've lost it totally. Yeah. Whatever that was. So it exists. And you can look it up. I don't trust Wikipedia that far, but you can look in Wikipedia. You can look at other places as well. So basically what this is, and it's this agreement between all of them. And here's the problem. It is illegal for anyone in the U.S. government to spy on a U.S. citizen. Now, this supposedly got us into trouble on 9/11 because they couldn't, once those guys got in the country, the NSA knew they were here, but they couldn't do anything and pass along any information to the FBI because they can only collect data from outside the country. They couldn't collect it from inside the country. So there's a lot of theories here. Now, so here's the issue we get into. We have Britain, and we have Australia, and all these other countries out there. New Zealand, Canada, the UK. And it's this signals intelligence that we're talking about. So that's everything to do with digital transfer or any kind of phone transfer, whether it's digital phone or whether it's just old analog phone. Even radio communication. So they have all these countries involved in this ability to spy, or basically to provide information to each other. There's a little loophole in our Constitution. Even though the country Our country cannot spy on us unless you're doing an overseas call to someone who is suspected of some kind of crime. They can't, our government supposedly can't record that information, or at least they can't record it to be used in a court of law. Now, they can record it. You can record your conversation. Anybody can record your conversation as long as they don't use it. It's not admissible in a court of law, but you better believe they can do it. They can even do it without a warrant. This is a little known secret. They usually don't, at least not on the local levels. And of course, the NSA finally, Clapper, who was the head of the CIA, I believe, he basically finally admitted, when he was asked flat out, he said, Congressman said, "Do we collect communications and data on U.S. citizens?" "No," he said, "no." And he was rubbing his forehead. And then he asked him again, he said, "So the U.S. government, CIA, does not collect any data on U.S. citizens making phone calls or any kind of data from their, I can't remember." And he goes, "Not wittingly." "Oh, so the definitive no now is all of a sudden, oh, we don't do it wittingly." So they do, they just don't mean to. So, here's what his excuse was. If someone that they suspect of a crime is calling someone else, say a congressman or a senator, they accidentally record the conversation with the senator. Now, what they don't tell you is they can go beyond that. They can go not just to that person who's under investigation. They can go two or three layers out. I don't know how many layers it is. They can now listen in on the person he called, as well as the person that person's calling. So they can extend the net, as it were, out further than that. In other words, anybody in that person's direct circle that they talk to, they can surveil them as well. So many people deep. Now, here's the problem. They can't go very far. They can't go too far. So they still have some limitations. However, there's some loopholes in this stuff. They can go to the Five Eyes. They can say, "Hey, there, Aussie buddy, can you, good day, mate, can you let us know, can you actually spy on these people here for us? Because we suspect them of something that might be a crime against you," or whatever it is, whatever they got to do to get the loophole passed so that UK government, the deep state there, can spy on someone here, and then they can exchange that information. Now, they'll say, "Oh, that doesn't happen. No, no, we don't do that. That would never, no, because that would be a breach of..." Now, not wittingly, Senator. Yeah. You tell me they're not doing that, and I'm going to take a sip of hot chocolate. Because I know better. So, not wittingly. Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff that's going on. They've got all kinds of ways. Well, how was it? What was it Schumer said? They got six ways from Sunday to come and get you if you tick off the intelligence world. Yeah. I wonder how Schumer knows that. They've probably got stuff on him and they probably let him know. We've talked about that already, the whole shakedown thing that the government does. So we got the FBI. And of course, at the top, we have found, obviously, over the last 4 years, that place is a brood of lying vipers. They'll probably be showing up at my door here at any minute now for saying that. And I haven't even posted this podcast yet. So we know better than to trust them. We know better than to trust the CIA, not wittingly. I don't wittingly trust them. So We also have the Justice Department. We also have the Congress itself that has now gone through an impeachment process based on a rabid hatred for a man that they had no hearings on, didn't bring any witnesses, didn't bring any testimony, didn't bring any evidence, just had to vote because they knew they had the vote, so let's just get it done and get him out of here. And the Senate has to have a trial. Now, whether or not they will have a trial under Schumer or not, I don't know. They may just say, we got the votes, let's just vote. And it's going to be after he has left office. Because the Constitution only matters to them, spelled with a K, when they can use it to leverage the people who will actually abide by it. Here's how this is going to play out. And I'm telling you this is the way it's going to work. And if I'm wrong, you can go back in time 4 years and tell me that I was wrong. So here's how it's going to play out. If all this stuff happens, if we wake up on Thursday morning and Joe Biden is the wonderful, the top dog president, big guy, as his son would call him on his laptop, the bag man. If he's the president of the United States on Thursday morning, head of the military, and he issues, I don't know, some kind of an order. Something like, I don't know, what might he say?
And Corn Pop was a bad dude.
Okay, let's say he says Corn Pop was a bad dude. Or maybe, maybe he says, I don't know, what else might he say? Just, he's got all kinds of things he can say. So, and I got a lot of them here on my little mixer board. I could push any button. All the stuff he says. So let's say we wake up and he's the president, and they start the start the impeachment trial of Donald Trump, who is now no longer president, supposedly. So they start this trial to impeach him. And they go through the process, and of course there's objections, and there's people squirming in their seats, and oh, this is a travesty, it's a constitutional. We've had more constitutional crisis than in the last 4 years than I've any time in my life. It's like every day on the news, we have a constitutional crisis. So we have that going on. So here we are again. We have this constitutional crisis, and everybody starts squirming and saying how, oh, this is we need to have hearings and blah, blah, blah. It's all job security for these guys. What else would they do besides hearings that don't go anywhere? It makes them look good. So they do this stuff, and they come out, and they're going to impeach him because they got the votes. So they're all going to vote for it, and there might even be some Republicans that vote for it. I assume Romney will, because he's not really Republican. So I assume that's all because he's so morally correct. He's a Boy Scout, and him and James Comey, they run around together because they're just such. Well, they walk around and they're just fascinated by the fact that their poop doesn't stink. So they run around and they're going to be there, and they're going to have this vote, and of course they're going to impeach him. Then guess where it will have to go? Let's say President Trump wants to run again in 2024. This is just a scenario that is going to play out. I know some of you are still hoping, as I am too, but I'm not injecting the hopium that some people are. I see where there's a possibility, some things possibly happening here, but I'm not gonna go down that trail too far. So here we are, and if he can pull this off, that's great. So. And I do believe that the election was stolen. Let's get real clear here. It was definitely stolen. So here it comes, 2024, and Trump wants to run again. And the country is in absolute shambles because we are now in some other kind of war because of the Middle East and the oil now that we are dependent on, because Biden's going to shut all that down. I should say Kamala by that point. We'll be shutting all that down. All this stuff's going to be crazy. There's going to be shortages, food shortages. We'll be wearing, we're going to be wearing masks, 4 or 5 masks, blindfolds, a tourniquet around our neck, whatever else there is, possibly a harness that we have to attach to a control cable with a mental plug that we have to put in our head so that we think properly. All this stuff's. So all this stuff's going to happen. And so here we are. We're 2024. Trump wants to run again to straighten out this mess. So guess what? Because he's been impeached, he can't run again. Well, he's going to claim that the impeachment was illegal, along with, you know, most, like 80 million other people. And we're all going to say that was an illegal, you can't impeach him, as it was illegal. Let's take it to, where are we going to take it? We're going to take it to, guess where? Oh, guess who? Guess who gets to look at it? The Supreme Court. Now, by that point, how many people do you think we're going to have on the Supreme Court? If they pull this thing off and we have 24 people, like they're saying, on the Supreme Court, do you think any of those people that take this case that are in the, now they might have a, what they're talking about is having a rotating group of 24 justices that only 9 will rule on a case. Well, that waters it down to the point where if you have, right now we have 5 supposedly conservative judges. I would say we have 4 with a swing judge that you don't know what he's going to do. And so we have those. I mean, it's maybe we have 5 with, I don't know. It kind of depends on how you look at it. So we have all these guys and we have, let's say we have 5 conservative judges out of the 9. And then you have 24 judges, 19 of which are people that they've put in because they've got the Senate. They can confirm judges. They got the president who can put the judges up, whether it's Comey or Beijing Biden, either one. So they're putting all this, they're stacking this whole thing in there, and they've got this rotating group of justices. How often do you think it's going to be that all 5 of those conservative judges, those constructionists, originalists, how often do you think they're going to be on the rotation of the 9 together? And I don't even think they're going to have, I think they're going to go with like a 13 or something, or a 15, with a rotation of a few of them in and out, or even more. They've talked about as many as 48. And then having them all rotate in and out and having a much larger jury. Basically a jury of judges. So this is where we're headed. So can you see now, by the time we get to 2024, how they're going to rule on that case? And if it was anybody else, they would rule differently. But because it's Orange Man Bad, how are they going to rule? I mean, they're going to do everything they can to exile this guy. First time in our nation's history where we've exiled an ex-president. And they're doing it digitally. The media is actually out of, so that's another institution that we have, is our media, our free press. And our free press isn't so free anymore. The more digitized we become as a society, the more everything we have is online and out there in the cloud, in the ether sphere, the more dangerous our society becomes with regard to our rights being able to be manipulated. Oh, you have the right to free speech. You have the right to the free press. Oh, yeah, you can have the right to free speech all you want to. We're not going to give you a platform for it. You got to go do that yourself. And oh, by the way, if you try to get a website with a DNA, with a DNS, you get try to register your domain name. We're going to work with that as well, because there's companies out there that have control of that. You have to register your domain name with companies that hold those names. Well, if they don't like your company, they're going to turn you down, or they're going to retract your name. That's where we're headed, and they are requesting that now. They're requesting that cable companies shut off Newsmax, OAN, NTD, and probably Epic Times as well. At some point, that's going to happen. So this stuff is all happening in real time now. Now, let me ask you this. In 4 years, where do you think we're going to be? Do you think we're going to be less digital than we are now? You think we're going to start printing presses again? Do you think the newspaper is going to become more popular? Or we're going to start printing, you know, having copy machines or mimeograph machine? I had a mimeograph machine for a long time, hand crank mimeograph machine. I don't remember those from high school. The old mimeograph machine had a thing that had a stylus. You'd put a copy in there, had a stylus that would basically copy everything from one page over to this other page, and it would make this template. And you put the stylus in this machine, and it would run off this blue ink stuff, and it smelled, it's had this really kind of a nice smell to it. I used to like that smell. But it was, you get these, it had basically blue ink on these pages, these papers. So it was before the days of mass copiers. These mimeograph machines would work flawlessly. They would work really well. Very well, you know, very, very amazing technology, but they would wear out over time. The stylus would wear out, you know, but they did a great job, and you can make, you know, thousands and thousands of copies. I used one for a long time making, inserts for the newspaper for a little business that I advertised back in the '80s, and nobody was using mimeograph machines at that time, but I was still pumping out stuff cheap. It had an electric motor on it, but I could actually hand crank it if the power went dead. That's the kind of thing we're going to be back to, because we're going to be living in the woods with a little solar panel to power, you know, to charge our. Well, we're not going to have a phone, so I don't know how that's going to work. But it's, yeah. So, yeah, find some sharp rocks. You're going to need them. So the world that we're headed towards. I mean, it's not going to get any better. I don't know how people understand, you know, people, when you look back 50 years and you think, okay, where have we gone digitally from then until now? How, you know, what's happened with the money system? How is this all, what are we progressing towards here, folks? Are we progressing towards more liberty, more freedom, less control in our lives? I don't think so. We have a lot more free time, supposedly. But, yeah, so not to be a negative Nelly here, not to be a downer for you today. I mean, we still have liberty in Christ. You still have liberty. As Paul said, even as a slave, I am free. As a free man, I'm a slave to Christ. I won't get into all that. But if right now it's just, I just want to point out the fact that we have a lot of institutions in the country that have become politicized and are easily manipulated by the media giving a narrative, which is also politicized. It's no longer the free press. I want to talk about this little, it's a museum. It's called, with an M, museum in D.C. And they call it the Newseum, N-E-W-E-Z-U-M, Newseum. And it's a museum about the media. Went through there a few years ago. And took a tour of the whole place, and it was real interesting. And we went through this whole thing, and there was one thing that was really, of all of the major news outlets that were out there, there was one that was missing. And it was kind of awkwardly missing. It was kind of like the elephant in the room, because they were actually, their viewership was actually bigger than anybody else they had in there. They were talking about ABC and NBC, and they had parts of the Twin Towers was in there, and they had different things, and they had this big map on the wall of, you know, where the press was the most free in the world, and had, you know, who had the most the free press, and they were all concerned about the free press. And I looked all over the place, and guess what? I couldn't find. I could not find one single mention of Fox News. At that time, not one. Now it'll be interesting, since the recent developments of Fox. They probably have their own room in that place now, but they didn't then. And it was interesting. We went through this whole thing, and I heard all the propaganda, and I actually kind of got into a little bit of a conversation with the lady who was giving the tour, because I had some questions about some of the things that she was saying. And I didn't get too confrontational, but it was at the point where I was kind of getting tired of the spiel. We went straight from there. We had a little bit of time left to do one more thing that day before everything closed. And the only thing we had left time, we really wanted to get to, was the Holocaust Museum. We went to the Holocaust Museum, and of course we had to wait in line for that. And they're down below in the basement. They change out the what the theme is in the basement area. There's like an area you can go through and take a little tour. And we had this guy that was giving us a tour, and the theme at that point was basically Goebbels and what the Nazis did to the Jews right before the war, and then of course during the war, and how the media played such a big role. It was the whole thing, the whole display in the whole tour was all about the media and how the media was involved in pushing public opinion and carving out the narrative that they wanted to have presented, and all the misinformation and disinformation. Misinformation is when you make a mistake. Disinformation is when you deliberately do something to misinform people. So it was all the disinformation campaign was very obvious. And this guy, this little guy that was there, he actually has, I believe it was his parents who were in Auschwitz. Lost his parents in Auschwitz. And he was going through and basically kept saying, he would make these comments and he would look at everybody kind of looking at him like, and then the media did this. And he would kind of point at everybody, he kind of point his finger in the air, and he was like, that's what's happening now. He was trying to tell, he wasn't allowed to say it. But it was kind of like, pay attention, folks. And I caught it. I don't know how many other people did or not, but I was catching it. He was very obvious in what he was saying. To me, he was obvious. He was trying to let us know without actually saying it. And that's what we have today. We have a media that is broken down, that is no longer, it is no longer the attack dog that's supposed to go after the Congress or after our politicians and keep them straight. It is a wing of the left-wing party, of the leftists, of the socialists. And I would say /communists. Communism and socialism are so closely related now. It's almost indistinguishable. If you go to Russia today, you'd probably just think of it as a European country, because the way they're set up. Now the Soviet Union was a little different, in some ways, but it's still the same. It was still the same kind of thing as Russia is today. So we have this massive mess right now on our hands of so many things being politicized, and in key positions, labor unions, seats of government, the media, the justice system, educational institutions, the big ones, all of them have been influenced and been infiltrated by a lot of philosophies that are left-wing radical stuff. And we've been sitting back and watching it happen. So it's all coming to fruition now. They basically have the noose around our neck. It's tight. It's snugged up to our neck to where we kind of feel it now. And all they have to do is one more little yank, and they've got us. So they know they got us where they want us now. That's why they're being so bold and actually being much more open and transparent about their philosophies in life. So this has been a much longer show than I had intended, and hopefully this kind of has opened up your eyes to some things or helped you see what's going on in the world and what's happening right now. And here, I've said all that to say this, to say that I'm in need of a little hot chocolate. President Trump is surrounded by this mess. When Mike Lindell went in to talk to him, supposedly Mike said, this is in his little speech that he gave a while back about what happened. This was an interview he had with Right Side Broadcasting Network. He said he went in to talk to the president. The president spoke with him for about five, all he had was about 5 minutes to talk to him. He had to get in and out of there pretty quickly. So he had all this information. He had all this evidence, 100% proof that he himself had checked out all the stuff that was going on in Italy. He had checked out the coordinates of where this stuff happened. He knows the coordinates of where the votes were changed, what, you know, where the machine was, that where the computer was, the IP address, all the stuff, this information. He knows all the stuff that had happened on the night when, that the Dominion machines were affected. And he also had a plan for how they could, you know, do all this stuff and get it to work, and who should be put in place, and go ahead and do the Insurrection Act, which I'm not exactly sure. I've tried to read through that thing, and I don't understand the mechanism for what people. I don't think it's what people think it is. You know, it's one of those things where
you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah, I don't think it means what you think it means. So the there's this whole thing of the Insurrection Act that's also a part of this. Now, supposedly Trump sent him out of the room, told him to go meet with some lawyers to deal with this stuff. Well, they kind of gave him the brush off, said it was going to be a couple hours. He said he would wait. Then they finally, all of a sudden, they had time in like 10 minutes. He was able to get in there. And they basically placated him. They basically got him to, you know, Case, tell me what you want. Give me, you know, gave him the 5-minute spiel and then shoot him out the door and told him he couldn't go back to talk to the president. No, it's too busy. You got to go. Now, one of two things happened there. Either Lindell went in there and that's the way it all happened, or something else happened. So there's basically three different scenarios. One is Lindell went in, talked to the president. The president knew this is futile. I'm going to have him talk to the lawyers so he can see what I'm up against, see what kind of people that are surrounding me. Once he sees that, he's going to realize this is an unwinnable battle because he's being surrounded by people that are basically part of the coup, whether they realize it or not. So maybe that was it. The other scenario is they already know this and they have plans that they cannot disclose. So they can't tell Lindell that they're working on this and it's already in the works. They basically have to kind of act like, no, we have to let you go. Sorry, we can't talk to you. Because you know, he's just a private citizen. He has no security clearance. If he walks in there, they have to walk him out. They have to kidnap the guy until this is all done, if there's something going on. So, okay, that's the second scenario. It's getting a little more conspiratorial. So now the third scenario is, I had one, and I don't remember what it was. So the third one is basically, it's just a done deal. Trump knows it. He knows he can't do anything about it. He is stuck. He's surrounded by people who he could sign an insurrection act, but everybody's going to look at him like, no, we're not going to do it. Would anyone care? I mean, he's not the one that's going to run out there and enforce everything. He's got to count on people to fulfill the insurrection act or whatever this is going to be, to do the work, to be the boots on the ground. And that's I don't know that he has the ability right now to trust the people around him enough. Now, I know that the Marines trust him. I think he trusts the military and the Marines. It's the only sign I've seen that something is up there. Now, this gets kind of back to what's going on with the Capitol now. So now you look at this and you say, okay, when else are we going to have a cage around Washington? When else are we going to see 25,000 troops, and now they're talking about sending more at the nation's capital, inside the fence, a lot of them, thousands of them, 2,000 of them being deputized as marshals. I mean, this is something else. This is pretty amazing. When else are you going to see this in history? I've never seen it in my lifetime. I've never seen this many military. This is more military than we have in Iraq and Afghanistan. In fact, more than we've had there for a long time. So now they're also sending within the National Guard, and this is something that's a little known, that's not being really talked about. There are active military troops there as well. I think about 4,000 is what they're talking about having there, active military personnel. When else would it be a perfect time for them? I mean, it's for them to do this later. Everybody's saying, well, this isn't going to happen until, you know, this could happen up to 45 days or 60 days or 90 days after Trump leaves office that all this stuff could happen. So they're gonna keep dragging out all this stuff and all these people with the conspiracy theories even after Biden gets into office, and so they're gonna keep this stuff going, keep people's hopium going. I call it hopium because it's like there are people that are just going nuts over this stuff. So I'm not buying it. I'm gonna settle in. I'm gonna assume that we're in for this for the long haul. Things are gonna get bad. Price of gas is gonna go up. We're going to have shortages, probably food issues. And of course, they're going to blame it all on Trump because Trump was the reason that the virus got here in the country anyway. And then they're going to say, got to wear a mask for 100 days. Well, I got news for you. That ain't going to fly well. People are already wearing masks pretty much everywhere. And 90% of the population is wearing a mask when going into stores and every place that they need to wear a mask. But all of a sudden, the mandate is going to change everything. Maybe he knows that something's going to change in 100 days, and they're going to say, look, it was magic. The magic mask worked. Maybe so. I don't know. But I think that's, you know, that in combination with the vaccine that I'm questioning as well. There's some weird things going on there. Might talk about that. Actually, tomorrow morning, I may talk a little bit about that, but I'm guessing by tomorrow morning, things are going to be pretty well heated up. So I'm going to be doing my podcast production well before, I'm going to try to do as early in the morning as I possibly can, because I want to be paying attention to what's going on in the world. I don't want to be locked in my little rubber room here and open the door and find out everything's gone. It's the day after. Is anybody out there? Anybody at all? All right. Well, so that's all I've got really today. It's just an hour-long show. I can just sit down and talk into a microphone for an hour. How does that happen? Boy. Some people might say I have a mental problem. I don't know if there's anybody that is qualified to say that, but, you know, they could very easily say that, probably. So, anyway, later on today, the show this evening will probably be published pretty late because there are some other things going on in life this afternoon. So I probably will be pushing the show out there a little bit later this evening. Hopefully Rabbi Rick will be with me. He'll be able to show up a little bit later than normal. So, yeah, that's the plan. So stay tuned. This one's going to get out here, but hopefully before noon and hopefully before Rush comes on at noon. Hopefully he'll be on the radio today. So God bless everybody. Have a great day and talk to you guys later this evening. And hope that you all enjoyed this episode. Make sure you subscribe and share this podcast if you can. I'd really appreciate it. It'd be great. So God bless. Take care.